welcome to the Clock and Talk, an Arsenal podcast. I'm your host, Tez, and with me this week is Tony and Schwinn. How are we, Tony?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I'm annoyed that Arsene Wenger listened to our last podcast and proved me wrong, but apart from that, I'm good.
And Schwinn, thanks for taking the reins last podcast, mate. How are you?
Doing very well. Always a pleasure. It was a bummer that we missed out on our guest for the week, but me and Tony had a decent conversation. And we're ready to talk about the game that happened yesterday.
Yeah, it was a good win too, 3-2. But we'll get straight into it, I think. Tony, first of all, we'll get to your lineup. You were proven wrong, mate. So, well, let's have your thoughts on it.
I mean, on the podcast that me and Schwinn done, I said I found it near impossible to pick a lineup. I started and I was just contradicting myself all over the place. So I saw a lot of people like a bit upset or disappointed or whatever when the team news came out, and I wasn't. It was just like, because I expected the unexpected sort of thing. So when I saw that team, it was like, oh yeah, it's not a surprise really. Obviously, I was surprised that Nelson was put in. But beyond that, there was no real shock. Nothing that really shocked me.
The one thing I was probably a little bit shocked with was, obviously Nelson. Awobi was back there, which I type of thought, well, if we're taking Thursday serious, we've got to have a bit of a balanced team here. But I was shocked at Elneny-Xhaka combination because, Xhaka's... He's no Ramsey or Jack. And then Elneny, he'll type... And I heard you boys talking about it last week on the podcast. He'll hold possession of the ball and pass it around and whatnot, but won't look to go forward, where Xhaka will create that from the mids into the engine of, you know, through Welbeck, Iwobi and up to Aubameyang. So I was a little bit surprised at that combination. What was your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not too fond of them as a pair, because not just the passing, but neither of them are great at getting forward, where we've usually got, I'd say, whoever and Ramsey's quite good getting forward, or whoever and Jack, and obviously, excusing the last few weeks' performances, Jack is quite good in them tight attacking areas. With them two, neither of them are really, that's not really what they do. So I'm never usually a fan of that pair unless it's a team where we're going to be conceding a lot of possession and you need a more defensive unit against. When we see us playing against a team like Southampton who are going to let us have a lot of the ball, I'm never really a fan of it, but obviously needs must. He wanted to rest Ramsey. He obviously wanted to rest Jack a bit. And as I tweeted out before the game, I was standing right on pitch side just talking to my friends who's sitting in the front, and Jack was warming up with so much strapping on his knee. I don't know if there's an issue there, but I don't know if that... was there a reason why he wasn't playing, or whether he was just dropped, or whether he was just rested, whatever it is, but he was heavily strapped. So if you say that Jack wasn't fit to play 90 minutes and he wanted to rest Ramsey, they're the only two centre midfielders we have left.
Mm-hmm. No, true. We'll get on to Jack a little bit later, because there's a bit of controversy going on around Jack, and you boys touched on it a little bit last week. Well, should say 2 days ago. Now, Schwinn, what was your take on the lineup, mate?
Well, you say Tony was proven wrong, but I would say I was proven wrong even more so, because I thought the lineup was going to be much, much stronger. I didn't think Kolasinac was going to get the nod. I didn't think Elneny was going to get the nod, let alone Nelson and Iwobi. It was obviously very surprising to see Nelson, because as we discussed last time, that it seems like he has a foot out of the door already. And I don't think this game changes that, to be honest. But the biggest surprise for me, Tez, was Ozil missing out. We've spoken time and again about how crucial he is in terms of, you know, making us tick in the final third and finding that pass, that killer pass. And we did struggle with that a little bit, but thankfully it will be stepped up in that central role, in that, you know, sort of free creative role. And he really did put in a shift the other day. So very good performance. I'm glad we were able to get the result despite the rotation, and onwards and upwards.
Yeah, I thought Iwobi had a rather decent game, and Nelson as well. However, did you notice Welbeck, and I'll stick with you, Schwinn, but Welbeck was floating in that position where Wobey would drift out a little bit, I noticed. And just on one of the goals, you notice Welbeck, he didn't get much of a mention, but that little flick to Aubameyang, that was magic.
It really was. I mean, you don't expect that sort of precision and flair from Danny Welbeck, especially on the first touch. You know, we've always argued that he doesn't have control of his feet, but that instant really proved us wrong. As for him moving inwards, I think that's organic with the way we work. We push our fullbacks pretty high up, and you know, our wide players, if they're creative, they will sort of become interior players and play on the edge of the box. Or if there's someone like a Danny Welbeck who have the strength to contest in the air or you know, try and get a shot off, then you know, they'll find themselves in the box. So I wasn't too surprised by that, but I was definitely taken back by the quality of the pass he found to thread in Aubameyang.
Tony, you were at the game, 70th minute. You see a Mustafi do what Mustafi often does, is, and I can only blame him on the way I looked at it. I looked back on the TV twice, three times, and I thought, and even Cech was looking at him, but 70th minute, long scores for Southampton, they go up 1-0. A few people have said, was it a Mustafi or was it Cech?
I can't believe anyone's even questioning Cech. It's clearly Mustafi's error. Like, for me, because obviously Mustafi blamed Cech straight away, but it wasn't even one of them where I needed to see a replay. It was down my end of the ground, but I was looking and it was just like, Mustafi, what are you doing? You've got to attack that ball. As a defender, unless you get a shout, you can never leave a ball. And I literally have no idea what he's doing. And the amount of times I've ranted about Mustafi on here, and I remember one game going as far as saying I never want him to see the play for us again. And then a couple of weeks later, he had a really good game and it's sort of like, all is forgiven. But it's just so frustrating because we know what he is capable of when it all goes well. And it's just like, his decision-making is just so poor. And I don't know if that can be coached out of him or into him to make good decisions. But, yeah, I mean, it was a terrible mistake and he's only got himself to blame for me. I don't know how he can even look at anyone else.
What question just off the cuff. How old is Mustafi?
Not as old as you think.
Okay.
25, 26, I think.
Yeah, okay. I was just thinking, if he... someone in Italian Serie A, they offered 20 million for him in the summer. Would that be something as Arsenal fans would be happy with?
As fans, we'd all look at who you get in to replace him. The issue is we're so light at centre. Well, we're perceivedly light at centre back. We've got numbers, but maybe none of them are solid first team numbers, as in first team players. If you sell him and only bring two in, some people would argue we need to bring in two anyway. So it's a tough one. As I said, it's just so frustrating with him because we've all seen games where he's been excellent and deserves every bit of credit he gets for that game, but then we've seen what we saw yesterday way too many times.
He's a frustrating player. You want to have a mention about the Welbeck flick onto Aubameyang in the 28th minute to level it up on all?
It was a great flick. I kind of want to echo what Schwinn said about with our wide players. They, if they're more a midfielder by nature, they come in and join in a sort of 10 role. And if they're a striker, naturally strikers like Danny Welbeck is, then he tends to join in and make it two up top. Especially yesterday, we were playing against the back five, which I think probably shocked us a bit. We looked early on like we didn't really have a clue what they were doing because they don't tend to play a back five. And I think to try and even out, so it wasn't Aubameyang versus three centre-backs, Danny looked to go central quite a lot, even before the goal. And obviously after the goal as well, Danny went central quite a lot to try and make it two strikers against three centre-backs instead of one striker against three centre-backs. I also want to say, and it's just something I've not really seen anyone mention, I think it's an unbelievable finish in terms of the improvisation. You never really see anyone finish like that. And I don't know if he would have had time to have a full swing at it. So just stabbing it in like that when the keeper's so close to you, I thought was great improvisation.
And that's something we've missed, experienced striker. That's what I try to put it down for. And we haven't had that at Arsenal for, Van Persie. a long time, I suppose, in experience. Some would say Giroud, but Giroud was brilliant in the air. So
yeah.
I'll probably put that down a bit of experience, or professional, I should say. 38th minute, Danny Welbeck gets it again with an assist from Iwobi.
Good team move, to be honest. It started with Danny winning the ball wide left pretty much on the half. Well, not winning the ball, he won a header that knocked it back to, I think, Kolasinac, zipped it into Xhaka. Xhaka played a very good ball through to Iwobi, and Iwobi played a good ball. And obviously Danny done very well. I don't think it would have went in without the deflection, but you buy your own luck sometimes when you take on shots. It's one of these things. I mean, a lot of listeners will know, I always have problems with assist stats when, like, obviously Iwobi gets an assist for that, and I'm not trying to take it away from him. I did think he had a good game, but, like, for me, is that an assist when the player's had three touches, beat another player, and then the shot's deflected and gone in? Obviously, by the letter of the game, it is, but do you know when people try and justify... I think Iwobi had a good game anyway, but if someone says he had a good game because he got an assist there, as I said, for me, he played a very good pass, and the assist is kind of not much to do with his pass. In terms of the second one, his second assist, which we're going to get onto later, for me, that's a brilliant assist. But this one, very good pass, is probably as far as I would take it.
So I look at it back from the play prior to that, and I know I'm maybe a little bit biased, but Xhaka was where it was built from, to Iwobi, and then obviously Iwobi assisted Welbeck, but Welbeck had a bit of work to do. It wasn't...
Yeah, he had a lot of work to do.
So I couldn't put the assist to Iwobi, but I get where it's coming from. And the reason I had a bit of a giggle, I think you got a question last week, the other day on the podcast, with Iwobi and Jack's stats by memory. And I just saw there's another assist goes to Iwobi, so it's making old mate's question that he put to you looking pretty good on stats, but not watching football with your eyes.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying, because I've always had this problem. It's nothing to do with Iwobi. Like, where, as you said, someone could give you the ball and then, like, say you're playing with Messi, you give him the ball, he goes and beats 10 players and you go, oh, that's an assist. Whereas someone else could put the ball on a plate for Danny Welbeck and then Danny Welbeck misses, as Danny Welbeck does, and that's not an assist, even though they've done everything right. So, again, it's coming back to the same thing. Jack's given Danny Welbeck an open goal and Welbeck's missed it. Yeah, Iwobi's given Welbeck the ball 25 yards out on the wing and Welbeck's beat a player, cut in, had a shot and got deflected. So in terms of stats, you go, Iwobi got an assist, and correct, he did. But if someone said to him, you can have one chance again, I know what one I would choose every time, and it would be the chance Welbeck missed.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Schwinn, you got any doubt on that?
Not really. I mean, I think Tony's exactly right. Those, and so are you, Tez. I mean, that shouldn't really constitute as an assist. I mean, for me, Iwobi was very, very good the other day. And I think for me, he was the man of the match, despite what Danny Welbeck did. And, you know, I mean, that game sort of took over, you know, in terms of the Danny Welbeck script. But with some of our key creative players missing, we didn't have the Aaron Ramsey, you know, run from deep. We didn't have Mesut Ozil or Mkhitaryan making things happen. So I feel it was mostly on Iwobi to be the creative fulcrum of the team. And, you know, you can't really put your chips on Nelson, considering it was his first start for us in the Premier League. So I thought Iwobi had a fantastic game. He was running the channels. He was willing to pick up the ball from deep, drive at players. Of course, Tony just mentioned the missed chance. It was a beautiful pass by Iwobi to find Wilshere on the far post. So... granted that probably shouldn't have been an assist, but that's not to say that we're taking anything away from Iwobi, because I thought he was special on Sunday.
What have we got? Bellerin, he got a yellow card in the 50th minute. I'm trying to struggle what that was now. What did he do?
He pulled a shirt.
Pulled a shirt, that's right. Yeah, okay. Jack Wilshere came on, Nelson went off. Just on if you were to rate Nelson's performance, boys, he has 64 minutes, 1 to 10, Tony?
6, didn't do anything right, didn't do anything wrong.
Yep. Schwinn?
I'd probably just be a little more lenient and give him a 7. I thought he showed some confidence. He was happy to, you know, do some flicks and tricks, and I think he was happy to take players on, considering it was his first performance, you know, first start in the Premier League, and the crowd was also a little nervy. I'll just give them the benefit of the doubt and just give him a 7.
Now, Jack, come on. The reason I ask you for that rating is because Jack's performance yesterday, if you rated his performance, Tony, out of 1 to 10.
Difficult. He wasn't good. I mean, I've seen people go 2s and 3s, and I just think, like, for me, that's awful. You have to get a 2 and a 3, you have to do a lot wrong. And I think Jack misplaced a couple of balls. I mean, one was very poor when just before the sending off, actually. That was very poor. But, I mean, for me, it'd be a 4 or a 5. He wasn't as good as Nelson, but I don't think he's as bad as a lot of people have said he was either.
Schwinn?
Probably a little lower. I'd probably settled for a 3. I don't think we would have conceded the second goal if it wasn't for Jack, because he rushes out of the box and lets Cedric just run into the box after a quick give-and-go. And, of course, Austin found the back of the net, having been on the field for just about seconds. So he did switch off there, and, you know, he's not the only one at fault. Of course, our center backs and, you know, our defensive line should have done better, but if he hadn't left his position, we probably wouldn't have conceded that goal. And let's be honest, Danny Welbeck missing that chance and then finally burying a header later on is not something you would want to bet on. So it was lucky that we were able to go through and get the result, but that's not something that you expect from Jack. That's a very, very immature decision from him.
The point, I agree with you. I mean, say, I think it was probably his job to rush out, but you've got to do it with a bit of balance so you're ready to follow. But the point I was trying to get at earlier is, had Jack got an assist, would you still give him a 3?
Well, I would go a little bit higher, and I'm sorry to cut you off there, Shrim. And the only reason is because he did have that chance for the assist, but Welbeck, whether you missed it or what he did, but had he just let it go, it would have went to Aubameyang, who would have got it in anyway, and Wilshere would have got the assist. Lacazette, sorry, yeah. So I'd imagine
Lacazette.
So I'd imagine Lacazette would have nailed that into the back of the net, given Jack the assist. And for me, that was I still don't know how he even managed to control that ball and get it across like he did. But so I would be at a 5.5, where Nelson would be around a 6. Nelson was a little bit better than Jack, but. Yeah, 3, bloody Oshwin.
No, I think I stand corrected, because Tony's right. I mean, that's not Jack's fault that Danny missed, you know, something from, you know, point blank range. And of course, you know, you tend to remember the mistakes more often than not. So I think I stand corrected. Maybe it should be a 4 or 5, maybe Tony's right. But, you know, I would rather have my midfielder show a little more strength when we are 2-1 up, and not, you know, not give up a goal and then try and attack, because, as I said, I did not bet on us winning that game once things were level at 2-2. But yeah, I think I stand corrected then.
Don't let us change your mind, mate.
Happy to.
Okay, just quickly while we are talking about Jack, he's not he's raising a few eyebrows, I suppose. He's not hated. You know, I heard you last week, Tony, talk about the fans at the stadium still love him. However, there's fans on Twitter and foreign fans who, I'm not speaking for me, I still love the bloke, but they want him to sign a contract, and basically it comes like with any player. You know, if you don't sign a contract, well, all of a sudden you're a hated player as such. But is this a trend because of what Sanchez created, and it went on and on? And actually, I could probably go before Sanchez, Tony, with Oxlade-Chamberlain.
You could go even further back than that. You had Nasri, you've had Fabregas, and probably Van Persie were the first three that big time. But even Adebayor, I remember Adebayor was...
Yeah, true.
Refusing to sign a contract one summer, and everyone moaned about him, and then he signed one. He scored a penalty in the Emirates Cup against, I think it was Real Madrid, and then suddenly he was a hero again, and then he left the next summer. But I'd imagine, obviously, they know it, but if Jack signed a contract on today and we beat Moscow 2-0 and Jack scored one and got an assist, suddenly it'd be great again. It's just Arsenal fans, for some reason, and I don't know if other clubs do it because I'm not as involved with other clubs' fans, but our fans tend to always want to have someone to moan about. And probably in a sense, the worst thing that's happened for Jack recently is that Jack has started playing well. Not in terms of position in the team, but it's impossible to hate Xhaka over the last 5-6 weeks. So, and we have to have someone to hate for some reason. Yeah. And Jack has been that person. And his performances haven't helped. I'm not trying to say he's been brilliant and we're hating him for no reason. He's been poor. But the level of how much he's disliked, he was gone from the most loved in probably January, February to the most hated by the end of March. And it's just like, it's bad, really.
I'll put this question to both you boys, because I tell you what, Tony, you fucking rattled me listening to that podcast last week. I don't want to ram on because I wasn't involved in it and it was fucking good listening. But you said that probably, I think it was along the lines, this could be Jack's last contract and basically he's, you know, he needs to survive life after football and different things, and he needs money to basically keep the life going after football, unless he gets into commentary or a pundit or whatnot. So I put this to you boys, if 110 is on the table, do you want him to sign for Arsenal because you love Jack, or would you like to see him go to, I don't know, an Everton or a I don't know who else, maybe back to Bournemouth for 220 and a week and go, well, you know, at least he's doing something, you know, and whatnot. Because I don't know how I wouldn't mind seeing him go that down that path if it was for him. Tony?
I love Jack because he plays for Arsenal and he wears his heart on his sleeve and all the usual nonsense. I couldn't care less about his personal finances, as horrible as that is to say. I don't know the bloke. He's not my mate. So if you're saying, would I prefer him at Arsenal for 110 or be happy for him to get 200 elsewhere, I'd prefer him at Arsenal. It's not, I don't care about his finances. And I don't mean that in a horrible way. But it ain't going to affect me. Him being rich isn't going to pay my mortgage.
True. Schwinn?
Ditto. It's Arsenal FC. It's not Jack Wilshere FC. I was having a conversation with one of our followers, and you know, we were talking about something similar. And my whole point to him was that, you know, we obviously can see that he's not having, you know, the best of forms right now. But it's our job to still support him because he's still ours. Just because he's leaving potentially at the end of the season doesn't mean that, you know, we find a reason to, you know, to detach ourselves from him. And I think that's also what's happening right now. Apart from the fact, as Tony mentioned, that, you know, we've started looking for another boo boy because Ramsey and Xhaka, who have, you know, taken some heat during the season, they've stepped up and they're performing really well right now. So it's always finding that one person, and it's surprising that, you know, we've turned on Jack so fast within the last 2 months, considering his history with us. I mean, as Tony said, you know, he wears his heart on his sleeve and he's Arsenal through and through. But at the end of the day, we support the club, and you know, we should support the players till the time they're at the club. Once they're out, then they're really not our responsibility, are they?
Yeah, I'm hearing what you're saying, boys, but I've got a bit of a soft spot there. I just think if he's not going to fit in at Arsenal, and he hasn't been playing the greatest of football, I think, well, it's his last contract. Don't get me wrong, I wouldn't like him going to Man City, Man U, Liverpool, Tottenham, Chelsea. But if he can make good money at Everton or whatnot, well, I think, well, good on you. Thanks for what you've done at Arsenal, but you don't fit into the team. You are getting on a little bit. Maybe this could be your last contract, so good on you, is the way I think. But just quickly, if there's any Bundesliga fans out there, can someone let me know who the fuck is Max Meyer? Because I heard Tony talking about last week. Who is this bloke?
So he's not the same as, but he's been likened to Cazorla in that he used to play likened as an attacking midfielder quite high up, and he's sort of this season mainly, and I think towards the back end of last season, they've dropped him into more, I don't want to say it's a defensive midfielder position because he's not like a tough tackler or anything, but similar to where Santi plays for us, so the deepest playmaker, so to speak. And he's done quite well there this year. So he's available on a free. In December, the two clubs that were linked the heaviest with him were us and Barcelona, because obviously they knew he was going to be a free in the summer. More recently, it's been us and Liverpool, because I think once Liverpool learned or pretty much established that they were very likely to lose Emre Can, they wanted to bring in another centre midfielder. So at the moment, it would seem the front runners for his signature are us and Liverpool. So yeah, I mean that's who he is. But he's a small technical centre midfielder that, as I said, this season he's been playing a bit deeper and starting the attacks in a, as I said, similar to Cazorla, not in style of play, but in terms of where they play.
We had another player last season that came from the Bundesliga on a free, didn't we? He hasn't fucking fulfilled his expectations.
Ex-teammates.
Yeah, are they? Are they ex-teammates?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. I've got no idea who Max Meyer is. Wouldn't have a fucking clue. Just know as he plays in the Bundesliga, so yeah. Don't even know who for. Can't remember.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Okay, anyway, sorry, I got off track because we're talking about Jack. So, yeah, Lacazette come on, 71st minute, Aubameyang went off. That was probably a good move, Tony. Lacazette needs, he's going to play on Thursday, so it was good just to get him out there for a little bit.
I thought it was very strange that Aubameyang came off. Like, the substitutions happened in front of me. Where I sit at the Emirates, it's literally 20 metres in front of me. And I saw, like, obviously, so I know 2 minutes before that Lacazette's coming on because he goes and gets changed into his kit, like, directly in front of me.
Yeah.
And we was talking, we was like, oh, who do you reckon, Iwobi or Welbeck? And like, I don't know, some people around me said Iwobi, some said Welbeck. No one said Aubameyang. And I wasn't even looking when, so the ball went off and they're making the sub. And I didn't look at the board go up. And something else, I don't know what it was. And then the announcer went, coming off 14, Aubameyang. And the whole crowd was like, what? Like, just because he can't play on Thursday, he's got that week to recover. Whereas one of Iwobi or Welbeck will play on Thursday. They have to.
Mm.
So it was a big shock that Aubameyang was coming off. Wenger said he felt he looked jaded. Fair enough. I can't say I thought that, but Wenger did and we got the result, so you can't really question him on it. But yeah, it was a huge shock that Aubameyang came off. But I understand, given Lacazette minutes, that wasn't the issue. It was who went off. And I know I saw a bit on Twitter of a lot of fans saying the same sort of thing, that Aubameyang is going to have the week to recover regardless. Why take him off?
We have an odd manager. We really do at times.
It depends. If he was, look, they've got technical data that we will never see. And if the data is coming back to them that he's tired and he's in the zone where he could pull a muscle, then it's the right substitution. But to my eye, it didn't look like he was tired. But you never know what the data says. I mean, we always hear about this dreaded red zone. But trust me, had he pulled a hamstring and Wenger said, oh, we knew he was in the red zone, but he couldn't play on Thursday, so we thought there was no need to take him off, everyone would have slated him for that as well.
Yeah, true. Schwinn, Charlie Austin come on for Southampton, and as soon as he come on, I went, oh, fuck, here we go. And next scene, fucking, here we go, two up, Charlie Austin. Who do we blame in there?
It was... I mean, it was almost a given he was going to score, wasn't it? Because Shane Long had already scored, and it seems like every time we face one of those two or any one of them, it's just going to happen that they're going to find the back of the net. We did touch upon this just briefly, but I think it happens with us when other teams are bombarding players forward and trying to rescue a point that we are unable to, you know, batten down the hatches and defend deep. So, of course, Jack was probably at mistake initially. You could look at some other players in the box as well who could have done better. I don't want to talk about it too much because I think what's really of substance is what happened afterwards. And just to quickly touch upon that substitution, it was really strange to me as well. Of course, as Tony said, if the club has some technical data and if that's what the gaffer thought, then fair play. But if we hadn't scored that last goal and, you know, the game ended 2-2 with Danny Welbeck still missing that chance, then everyone would have been questioning Arsene as to why he didn't make, you know, why didn't he take off Welbeck and put Lacazette instead of him. So it's a really tough one. It just seems like the boss got it right at the end of the day. So I'm happy about that. But it didn't seem to me that Aubameyang was tired either. And it was very, very strange when that substitution happened.
Tony, another sub, obviously, 74th minute holding on, Bellerin off. That was probably due to Thursday. Bellerin's going to play. And then we're type of thinking, fuck, we need a goal. It's 2-0. And you wouldn't believe it, a wavy assist, Welbeck in the 81st minute.
It was an unbelievable ball from Iwobi, especially on his weaker foot. Poor defending from Southampton, but Iwobi put the ball in a perfect area and Danny peeled off on the back post. And it's like I've said a million times before, when if Danny pulls off against a fullback in the air or in a battle of strength, 9 times out of 10, there's only going to be one winner. And he was a winner on that occasion. You're never really sure where his header's going to go. The same as when he's kicking the ball, it could go absolutely anywhere. But I think from that range, he couldn't really miss. But it was all down to the ball. I think when a ball comes in like that, and you're bigger than the man that's marking you, which was the fullback Cedric in this case, you can't really miss. It would have been unforgivable to miss from there. That for me, that's maybe not an easier chance, but that's nearly as easy as the chance Welbeck missed because of the ball was so good.
Mm-hmm. Good at trick, Welbeck. I thought he had a good game. Then I still can't get my head around this, right? So, Jack. Was it Stevens? He's in the 90th minute. He's ripped his shirt off, and then Elneny's decided to get involved in some bit of a scuffle as well. So he's got the red card. Jack's got the yellow card. Stevens got a red card. Do you want to go through that, Tony?
Yeah. So first of all, I've seen a lot of people slating Jack for it for being immature or whatever. I think what he'd done, and this is not because I like Jack Wilshere, I think what he'd done was excellent. He knew Jack Stevens was going to react and would get a red card for it. So take out the players' names. Take out whether you think I like Jack Wilshere and I'm biased or not. If I said to you, our player could get a yellow card and their player will get a red card while we're hanging on to win the game in stoppage time, would you take that? You'd say yes every time because it puts us at an advantage. So I was talking, actually, when I came out of the ground, the first message I got was from one of my friends that plays in the Football League. And he said, his exact words were, Jack, like Wilshere set the trap and Stevens was so inexperienced he fell for it. And I think that's the ideal way of putting it. For me, that's not immature. Jack never done anything that would warrant a sending off or threaten a sending off. And he stopped the counter-attack, albeit by giving them a free kick. But then, as I said, he set a trap and Stevens fell for it. At that point, he'd given us a man advantage. I've also seen other people blaming him for Elneny's red card, which for me is absolutely scandalous. It had been separated for about 30 seconds and then Elneny went back in. And I know why Elneny went back in, because they tried stealing 10 yards with the free kick, which would have made it a hell of a lot more dangerous. And he was trying to push the ball back and get them to take it where it's come from. And I've seen a lot of people say it was never a red card and Arsenal should appeal it. I think it was. Just because he put his hands on the guy's face, it doesn't have to be hard. If you put your hands on anyone's face, you're running the risk and you should get sent off if the ref sees it. I know Leicester, Harry Maguire from Leicester the day before only got a yellow for pushing Dwight Gayle from Newcastle in the face. But the ref's got that wrong. You can't... Elneny done less than Maguire, but because the ref got it wrong on the Maguire situation, you can't really compare that to Elneny's. Again, the same player who, like, from the Football Leagues that messaged me to say about Jack setting the trap, he messaged me and said, that better not be you on Clock End Talk saying that it's a ridiculous red card. That's a red card every single day of the week. And these guys have refs come in to talk to them every 2-3 weeks, so they know exactly what they can and can't do. And he's in the Football League, so the Premier League players know this. They probably have refs come in every week and remind them of everything. Elneny, I'd be amazed if Arsenal appeal it, and Elneny will know that it is a red card. It's a soft one, but if you know don't put your hands on someone's face, the moment you do, irrespective of how hard, you're in trouble.
So Elneny got the red card because he put his hands on the face. That's where it come down to.
Yeah, he pushed. I think it was Bertrand. Yeah, he pushed him in the face. It wasn't hard, but don't put your hands on someone's face. Push him in the chest. It's a yellow.
Yeah, and Jack Stevens got the red card because he type of really reacted when Wilshere around the face as well, didn't he?
Yeah, again, I mean, his was harder than Elneny's, but it was a forearm slash a push to the face, and that's it. As soon as you touch anyone's face, and I don't mean, now someone's going to go, oh, he put his hand on his cheek to say unlucky when he missed. I don't mean that. I mean in a violent conduct sense. As soon as you put your hands in someone's face, you know you're getting sent off.
Yeah. No, I'm happy with all that. And then there was a Southampton player got a yellow card, so that was, I'm not sure, that was obviously something to do with it as well. Wesley, that might have been the reaction with Elneny or something, I suppose.
I think there was a tackle after. I don't think it was in the same incident. I think it was just after. I think it was when we cleared that free kick. I think. I can't really remember, to be honest.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to scratch my head on as well. Schwinn, you agree with all that, mate?
Pretty much. What I'll do is just mention an incident that happened very early on in the game where Tadic went on to challenge a ball against Nelson. And I thought the ref missed something there because that was a horrendous tackle. I mean, the studs were raised, and I remember tweeting out when that happened that if this happened sometime later in the game, closer to the 70th or 80th minute, then, you know, Tadic would at least be warned, if not be sent off. So that's something we'd... Yeah, so that's something we didn't discuss earlier, so I thought I'd bring that up. But Tony's exactly right. Jack did all you would expect a player to do at that point when someone is running past you. All Stevens needed to do was just go down and not retaliate, and you know Jack would probably get a card for a professional foul, and Southampton would go on to get a free kick, and Stevens is an aerial threat. So I thought that was very immature and unprofessional from Stevens to react in the way he did. That's not to say that, you know, Jack's foul wasn't strong. Of course, we saw what happened to Steven's shirt. So obviously there was intent to bring him down, but it was just the retaliation that was unwarranted. On Elneny, yeah, I mean, as Tony said, I don't want to go on and on about it, but I think he's exactly right there as well. So I don't think the ref got that wrong.
Did I just remembered, because I was looking at Chambers, and did you see that? I don't know what it was. It was almost like he was trying to do a bicycle kick. I can't remember. Did you guys see it?
Yeah,
I did. Yeah,
first off.
Yeah.
He also tweeted after the game with a photograph of him doing it with Cristiano Ronaldo doing it, saying not close enough, but just about, which was brilliant. I thought
that would have been a classic if he had done that. If he had pulled it off.
Just a quick observation on Chambers. I mean, Tony mentioned this last week that Chambers was very decent, and I thought he had a decent game on Sunday as well. I mean, his defense is not, you know, very sturdy, and of course you have to always judge a defensive pairing and not you know, center backs in isolation, and having Mustafi besides you is not always something concrete, as we've spoken about with his inconsistency. But I thought on the ball, Chambers was so tidy and so confident yesterday. The Southampton players, especially Shane Long, was very prone to pressuring Chambers when, you know, when he found himself on the ball, and he was very confident getting away from him and finding that tidy pass. So just a quick shout out to Callum Chambers, who's also gotten a lot of stick from us in the past.
Your man of the match, Schwinn?
It will be for me, just because of him stepping up despite not really doing well for the last few months, in fact.
Your boo boy?
I don't have a boo boy. I don't do that shit. Get that out of my house.
Okay, Tony, man of the match?
That guy, Welbs. Well, back by a distance for me. Not only because of the goals and the assist, I thought defending from the front, I thought he was excellent. There was a point just before his miss, actually, where I was thinking, even if he hadn't scored and got an assist, he probably would have been my man of the match for how well he was closing them down and harassing them at the back. The amount of misplaced passes they made or long balls that went to no one just because they were getting rid of it because Danny was shutting them down. He won possession back sort of indirectly so many times just from his pressing. Yeah. So for me, it was comfortably Welbeck, but I would put Iwobi second, but comfortably Welbeck for me.
Do you have a worst player there?
No, I don't want to pick anyone out. I mean, I think saying who was the worst player is different to Boo Boy, and a lot of people would probably say Jack was our worst player, but played 20 minutes. In them 20 minutes, yeah, there's an argument he was our worst player.
I was only saying if Schwinn had bought.
Yeah, I think Schwinn may have answered if you said who was our worst performer, but Boo Boy, Boo Boy's a different thing.
Hey, fuck you.
What was I going to say? For me, the match, Welbeck by a mile. I was actually going through, and you boys might be able to jot my memory. That was probably the best game I've seen Welbeck play in. Like, he's been good in the Europa Leagues and stuff, but do you remember, like, has he got a couple of goals and assists like that before? When would have been the last game?
He started off the season really well. I think there was a game earlier in the season, I think it was Bournemouth, maybe. We won 3-0 and he got two and Lacazette got one, and I think he got this assist for Lacazette's goal. Might not have been that game, but he started off the season with quite... He scored against Leicester. I think he got a goal and an assist against Leicester the first game of the season. He definitely scored.
Yeah.
He then scored... he scored a few goals earlier in the season.
I just mean he just seemed to be everywhere. For me, it was... Like, he was in the middle, he was at the end of Iwobi's header for the second goal. You know, I've probably seen, but it's been a long time since I've seen him beat two or three players, and I know it ricocheted off at the end, but, you know, to score the goal, like, that to me was... Well, it was fucking outstanding by Welbeck, to be honest. So, yeah, he gets my man the match by country mile. You said Iwobi for your second, but... I'm actually...
Here we go.
I'm going to give it to Shaka, my second. I got to give you...
Surprise, surprise.
Jesus Christ, boys. I call him the engine, boys, the engine. Worst player for me, I just have to say Mustafi because of that first goal, Southampton. It was just a stupid mistake. And it was probably the one
That's a decent shout.
Just the one that stood out in my mind. You know, he cost us a goal, and it's just fucking stupid, to be honest. I don't know what he was even thinking. That's about all. Is anything else on that match, boys? No. Covered it all.
Just a quick shout that I forgot. Something I loved in that whole Jack Stevens and Wilshere incident was the fact that how Kolasinac came to the rescue. And shoved Stevens. If there's one person you want to have in your corner when things are going south, it's Kolasinac, and kudos to him for stepping up for a teammate. Always love seeing that.
And also, it goes with what I was saying earlier. He pushed him in the chest and probably should have been booked, but didn't even get booked. Had he pushed him in the face? Automatic red card. And where the people that are blaming Jack for getting Elneny sent off, if Kolasinac would have pushed him in the face and got sent off, there would be half an argument because it was directly from the incident. But Elneny's was a long time after. But yeah, I'm just pointing out that pushing in the chest, okay. Pushing in the face, you're getting sent off.
Yeah, fair call. 3-2, fair result,
though? Yeah, probably. There was times, especially at 2-2, where we looked on the ropes. But then you look back at the start of the second half and... for about 10 minutes, we peppered their goal. It was 2-1 to us, and their keeper made two or three really good saves. One from Aubameyang, one from Iwobi, and one from Xhaka. Mm. And at that time, you thought, oh, this could be four or five here if one of them goes in. But then, yeah, as I said, at 2-2, it looked like, at one point, it looked like there was only going to be, if anyone was going to win it, it was going to be them. But I think on the balance of play, 3-2 is probably a fair result.
Yep. Schwinn, you're happy with that, mate?
3 points, you'll never hear a complaint from me.
Oh, no, me either. How good was Shaka, boys, eh? Fuck. Okay, let's get into some questions. Friedenugula. At most certainly. We'll stick with that one. Tony, what do you think will happen with the lineup when Santi returns from injury and to full fitness?
Unfortunately, I don't think it will ever happen.
No, I don't think it will either.
Yeah. Mm. So I got, and if it does, it's definitely not going to be till probably midway through next season, and we don't know, is Jack going to be there? Is Ramsey going to be there? Who are we going to sign in the summer? So if Santi gets a contract extension and he looks like he's coming back at some point next season, and I know what squad we've got next season, then I can answer that question. At the moment, I can't.
And this, if this Max Meyer comes in too, well, that's, you said, well, that's a Santi replacement, or, but then you were talking could be a Jack replacement, so.
Oh, well, I think, Santi, as I said,
in position, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I said, what I said was that I don't really think it is a Jack replacement, but if we do lose him, they'll go, like, to the PR of the transfer will be, well, we lost Jack, but we got this guy in, we got Max Meyer in.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it really is a Jack replacement.
Okay. Schwinn, Awobi says, or at Abixler. Okay. Some of these questions, I really struggle. Because a question starts with, or me, a midfielder trio of Ozil.
I think it means for me.
Okay, yeah, for me, a midfielder trio of Ozil, Rambo, Xhaka, as the perfect mix of skill, energy, and composure to be very effective. Do you agree? And if not, who would you swap out and why? Transfers included for the next season.
I don't disagree with that, but I think that that midfield trio lacks a defensive edge because Xhaka is probably the only one who's going to put in a defensive shift, because we know Ozil and Ramsey are very, very fond of being up top. I think that this trio will be dictated by the quality of our defense and the way we set up. We've spoken time and again that our defensive issues are much more than just personnel issues. So let's assume for now that we get in, one or two center backs, and we're able to reinforce in the defense. If that's the case, and if we are not leaking goals, then that midfield for me works. But if it doesn't, if we're unable to get our reinforcements, then I think we'll continue seeing Ozil on the wing, which I hope is not the case. And we might have to throw another midfielder with Ramsey and Xhaka to solidify things. This is also assuming that Ramsey sticks around and we don't ship him this summer.
Well, I think Ramsey and Xhaka, and Tony, you might have something to add on this in a minute, but Ramsey and Xhaka, they've probably been, the most consistent of the two, especially in the last, six, seven games. Ozil up top, and then you've got your two out wide, haven't you? So what, Mkhitaryan, and we're still looking for that replacement for Walcott. So you guys have said it a few times, we need a right wing replacement. So depends on who comes in and whatnot. Tony?
I think this is very much the romance of here and now. All three of them are playing well at the moment. So he said that it's the perfect balance of midfield. But go back to this time last year. Wasn't working. We played them three pretty much all of last season and it wasn't working, and it was this weekend last year we changed shape to a back five because of that midfield getting overran, and then it was just Ramsey and Xhaka as a two, but obviously with the wing back supporting, and it worked a bit better for a period. And then we started this season again with them two, and it wasn't working, and we changed back formation, and many would still argue it wasn't working with them two. And then Jack came in and it still probably wasn't working. I don't know if we have the answer within the squad at the moment, but that midfield three has proved for a long time that it doesn't really work for whatever reason.
It's the best we've got, though, isn't it? Like, who else would you change?
Well, for me, I think the best we've got is playing with the extra man, as we have been in the Europa League and we have done with Jack recently, I say shifting Ozil out wide, but anyone that looks at an average position map or actually just watches the game will know I don't mean he's playing out wide. But when you look at how they set us up on the formation on paper, it's Xhaka and Ramsey with Jack at 10, Ozil wide and Mkhitaryan on the other side. I think at the moment that provides us with much better balance. At the moment, I don't think there's a three. I think it's a four. And they're all pretty much interchangeable. If Ramsey pushes two forward, Jack can slot in or Ozil can slot in. Or if Ozil comes central, Jack can go wide, Ramsey can go wide, Jack can drop deeper. It's all very interchangeable. And I think we look most secure playing like that at the moment. And I think, in a way, he tried to keep that mould yesterday with Nelson didn't stay on the touchline and right against the wing back. He tucked in quite a lot, and Iwobi came quite deep from 10. So again, it was, and Iwobi was wide at times. So again, it was quite interchangeable. So I think he's, I think Wenger's leaning towards more of a model where it's maybe a four than a three, but on paper, Ozil's listed wide. But as I said, in reality,
well, he comes in anyway. Wide.
Yeah.
Ozil, Rambo, Xhaka, Jack, obviously Mkhitaryan in the mix. Nelson and Iwobi, they don't really push for that first team position.
It's always difficult to say after Iwobi had the game he did yesterday, but I think when everyone's fit, and again, look, we're comparing probably Iwobi's best game of the season to if we're saying Jack is the one that could potentially miss out to one of Jack's worst, or in a period where Jack's been bad. Yeah. If you're comparing best for best, I think there's only one winner, and there's Jack, and it's Jack. But if you're talking about the here and now for next week, because of Mkhitaryan being out, they both might play, or one of Danny or Iwobi will play, or maybe both, and Jack misses out. But I think at our strongest, for me, it'd be Xhaka, Ramsey, Deke with Ozil wide, but I don't mean wide, and Jack at 10, even though I dislike Jack at 10. But I just think it just gives us more security because we can look after the ball more.
You mentioned Nelson's, you know, and both you boys mentioned the other day that Nelson's one foot out the door. He's obviously come into the team, and that's due to Mkhitaryan's injury. Probably no other reason.
I think due to injury, also due to rotation. We made 7 changes from Thursday. Had he stayed with the same team but just took Mkhitaryan out through injury and bring back in someone else, it wouldn't have been Reece Nelson. It would have been Danny or Iwobi. And then the second choice would have been the other one of Danny or Iwobi. And the third choice would have probably been play Aubameyang wide and play Lacazette up top. Nelson's still fourth or fifth choice at best.
I got another question on it, so I won't talk about it now because I think somebody does talk about Lacazette and Aubameyang in them positions. So I will come to that one later. Tony Shree, my little mate Shree, how are you, buddy? Does Cech have it in him to play 2 games a week or so? How much will we miss Mkhitaryan on Thursday, especially for his incision and shot taking? Both Iwobi and Welbeck lack that.
I think unless someone else asks a question, he goes on to ask about Macy as well, doesn't he?
I'm scrolling up, mate, so I haven't seen it.
Okay, if not, anyway. Fitness in terms of physically, obviously keepers don't get fatigued, so there's no issue of him playing twice a week. It's not as if he's running around all over the place. And also, obviously, Ospina's out. Macy's not good enough, so he has to play. You do run the risk of him getting injured, but less so for a keeper than in any other position. A keeper's much less likely to get injured. You could say the same about Lacazette coming on for 20 minutes yesterday. Did we run the risk of getting injured? But you've got to give them games at some point. You've got to give them minutes. So for me, Cech's fine to carry on playing. What was the other part of the question? Oh, Mkhitaryan. I don't know. As I said, I didn't think he was great last Thursday. Look, the tie should be over, and I'm not counting my chickens before they've hatched, but the tie should be over, so hopefully we won't miss him. If the question was saying, would I want him in the first team if everyone was fit, the answer would be yes. Will we miss him on Thursday? Hopefully not.
Okay, both Iwobi and Welbeck lack that, so that's what he's worried about. Mkhitaryan's out, and what Mkhitaryan offers, Iwobi and Welbeck lack it.
But yes, I agree, and I agree he is better than both of them, but they also both have strengths that Mkhitaryan don't. Assuming Moscow are going to play the same defence, because they play pretty much every week of Ignacevic and the 2 Berezutskis, they're going to have a 35, like 3 defenders over 35. So Welbeck will offer pace in behind, which Mkhitaryan couldn't offer. So I'm not saying Welbeck's a better player, and we do miss out on the things that Mkhitaryan is good at, but with, say, if it is to be Danny in there, we will gain things that Mkhitaryan isn't good at, which could be a direct threat to the opponents we're playing on the day, because they won't like someone as quick and strong as Danny running at them or running in behind them.
Remind me later, we'll just touch base on Moscow, because I'd like to hear what your team lineups are, boys. So have a think about that. Okay, Schwinn, Justin, how are you, Justin? An Aussie bloke. If you had to say on Wenger's future, would you A, sack him at the end of the season, B, let him honour the rest of his contract, or C, tell him to win the Premier League or Champions League if we do make it back in for a new contract?
I'm very biased when it comes to this, so I'm going to go with B here. Let him honour his contract, because I think there's no point trying to sack him, even if it was in my power, because the owner won't let me. And even if I told him to go win the Premier League and the Champions League, it's not as if that he's not trying to. Obviously, that's his goal, but it's just not happening for him at the moment. So I would just let him honor his contract. I'm very much a very Arsene Wenger fan, despite agreeing to the fact that things have gone stale at the moment. I don't think it's necessarily just because of him. I think he's the face for a lot of problems that, you know, he may not be directly responsible for. So I'm going to go in with a very Wenger in response to this one.
And Justin, that's our American fence sitter, mate.
I give you an answer.
Tony, what do you go? A, B, or C?
Well, just before I answer, Schwinn has always been the most popular person on this podcast. I think a lot of people have just started to dislike him, and I may now be the most popular. So thanks for that, Schwinn.
What have I fucking done wrong?
You can't say anyone's name. You can't say anyone's name. You've lost from the start. No, for me, if the decision was in my power, I would, just because of the respect I have for the man and what he's done in the past for us, I would say, Arsene, leave, and it looks like it's on your own back. And this happens a lot in football. Say you're quitting, you've had enough of club football, whatever it may be, and it was your decision, and it doesn't look like you've been sacked. And if he says no, then he gets sacked. That's what I would do. And as I said, a lot of the time when you see a manager has left by mutual consent or anything along them lines, what's happened is the chairman or the board has said, leave or you're getting sacked. And they'll come to some form of financial agreement that suits everyone, I guess. So that's the way I'd put it. But if he refuses to walk the plank in the summer, I'd be pushing him along it.
Yeah, I'll just tap him on the shoulder and say, thanks, buddy. But number A, you're out, champs. Sack him at the end of the season, because can't just keep old dog around like fucking with the same old tricks, can you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess mine's A, but player.
Yeah, you're just a nice pommy. Geez, I'll be fucking kicked off this podcast soon. Okay. Jonas says, Tony, this might have been what you're talking about, mate. Ospina out injured. Why does Wenger not seem to willing to give Macy a chance in our not-so-important league games? Imagine Cech getting injured in the next couple of days during training or in the league game. I don't want to imagine that, to be honest, Jonas.
Yeah, I mean, I covered it the other day. Matt Macy's just not good enough. And we spoke about it in depth, and I know Jonas listened, so he probably did hear it. But, he's just not good enough. We've fallen into the same... One of the reasons that everyone... I don't want to keep going back to Jack Wilshere, but one of the reasons that people have started turning against him, so to speak, is saying, oh, we can't just keep supporting him because he's a local boy and he shows passion. And then on the other hand, they're saying, why isn't Matt Macy getting games? Why should he be getting games? He wasn't good enough in League 2 last season. This time last season, he was not good enough in three leagues below the Premier League. Why suddenly, when he's played one or two games since then, should he be starting for us? I get that the league games, look, we still want to win. We don't want to come seventh because it would involve a qualifying round for the Europa League, depending on who wins the cup. But we don't want to come seventh, and Cech will want to play every game. As I said, the running the risk of injuries, and it's quite interesting because in Jonas's question, I believe he says, well, what happens if Cech gets injured in training? Well, that doesn't, if he gets injured in training, it doesn't matter that he started the week before. He gets injured in training, there's nothing you can do about it. I think he just means in terms of giving Macy minutes, but I don't think you can sacrifice a level of performance just in case someone gets injured. Again, it's like saying the other day, if Aubameyang did need to come off, we don't know if he did, why did he bring Lacazette on? Because he could have got injured. And then why didn't we bring on Eddie or anyone else that isn't going to factor on Thursday? for me, I don't think you can just completely throw away things like that. And believe me, that the backlash would have been huge if we lost 3-2, even though we're saying, you know what, it's a bit of a nothing game, which it is. I still wanted to win it, and I still think there'd have been huge criticism if we didn't win it.
I think the, and I don't want to take the words out of Jonas' mouth here, but I get the impression that, myself, I'm thinking, I want to win Europa League. I'm throwing all my eggs into the Europa League basket. As far as I'm concerned, best we could finish in the Premier League is 6th or 5th, depending on how Chelsea go. Oh, and I get what you're saying. Worst could be 7th, but then I'm throwing all my eggs in the fucking on the Europa League. I worry that we get to the final of the Europa League, and I look at that question and think, "Fuck, Cech can't play. Spina's injured. Cech's injured. We're going to throw Macy into the fucking final of the Europa League."
But you can't. I don't think you can do things on an if. What if Cech gets injured, especially with a keeper, where is statistically injuries are very rare. So I don't think you can do stuff on an if. And also, I'll tweet Graham Stack after we finish recording, because keepers want to play. They want to have their eye in. They don't like coming in every now and then. I think Fabianski is a great example. I actually think Fabianski is a very good keeper. He looked awful at Arsenal because he was playing once every 3 or 4 weeks and they're not match ready. And I know fitness doesn't so much come into it, but whatever it is, keepers like playing. All players like playing, but keepers, I don't know, it's their performance improves when they get a run of games, usually. As I said, I don't know if he'll reply, so for any listeners, I'm not promising a reply, but I'll tweet Graham at Stack and ask him, would he have been happy just coming in every 3 weeks as a keeper? And I don't know the answer, and I'm not putting words in his mouth, but I'd be very surprised if he says anything, but I would want to play every week.
Yeah, okay, interesting. Do you think somebody's kicking themselves, and I suppose it'd be Wenger now, was it Martinez? He's on loan. Do you think he's thinking, fuck, why did we loan him out now?
To be honest, Martinez looked okay when he came in, and a lot of people that have seen more of him than I have thought he had an opportunity at really challenging for the number one spot. So I think Wenger probably thought, we've got two keepers that are good enough for the first team in Cech and Ospina. And Martinez isn't going to get any minutes here. And if he is going to go on to be a first-team keeper for Arsenal at some point, he needs to go and get minutes. So he's loaning him out to a top league. He's in La Liga. It's not like he's gone to a second or third tier. I haven't looked recently, but when I looked before, he wasn't getting any minutes. So it hasn't worked out. But then maybe that tells you if he's not getting minutes where he is, he's probably not good enough to get minutes for Arsenal. But I don't think there's much of an issue in what Wenger done in terms of, because, again, you could go on the same thing. If Martinez hadn't played a minute this season and then Cech and Ospina happen to be injured for the final or whatever, if we get there, and Martinez comes in, it's the same thing. You're still going to end up with a keeper that hasn't saved a football since for over a year in a competitive game.
Fuck, wouldn't you put in these loan deals? Like, fucking, whoever sorts it out, like, wouldn't you? I'd rather my whatever it is, second, third tier keeper go to somewhere where he's going to get minutes, not just sit on the fucking bench.
Well, I think they assumed he would, but if the other team, if wherever he's, I don't think you can pull it in a contract. But the thing is, if he's not good enough, if he's not getting in their first team, that tells you, for me, that tells me enough, and it's nothing against Martinez. I don't have anything against him, and I thought he looked okay when he played for us last year. But if he's not good enough to get into a mid-table Spanish side, that tells me all I need to know. Unless that mid-table Spanish side just happens to have a freak of a keeper, like for some reason De Gea was still playing in the mid-table in France and in Spain, sorry, and everyone's trying to sign him. But if it's the mill keeper that ever looked at, you're not really interested in signing him, and Martinez can't get in the team over him, for me, that tells me all you need to know.
A good point again. Okay, Schwinn, still with us, mate?
I am. Yeah, I actually have a question for you, because I don't think there's much I can add on the discussion that already happened. It seems to be that a lot of fans think that even when Ospina is back, which I think will be in a couple of weeks, Wenger will stick with Cech in goal for the Europa League. Do you guys agree with that, or do you think we'll go back to Ospina in goal? Tez, why don't you have a crack at it first?
That's a real tough one, actually, because Ospina hasn't really done much wrong, where Cech throughout the season has made a few mistakes. It is a really tough one. I I would probably run with a Spina, because for me, just trying to think back to our ratings, boys, for the season, I think I'd give a Spina a little bit more, 1 point more over Czech. I think Czech has made too many errors early on in the season, more so I remember them. But, yeah, I'd run with a Spina. Tony?
If, I don't know, obviously no one knows what Wenger's thinking, but if he does stick with Czech, then I think Ospina will become our Premier League keeper. I don't think he will just play one of them for the remainder of the season. I could be completely wrong, but Wenger's always been a very loyal man, and he's obviously, if he's promised a keeper to cup competitions and for some reason he feels he can't honour that for the good of the team, I think he'll still give him minutes elsewhere, as in the league.
What would you get? What would you get?
Again, I mean, you guys are right. It's very confusing. I think he's going to stick with Ospina. He has, you know, even in the FA Cup last year when we faced Chelsea in the final. Of course, Czech played in goal, I think, for the semifinal against City. But as Tony said, that Wenger does like to, you know, remain loyal. And once he's told his players that, you know, they have a certain role, then he sticks by that. So I think we'll stick with Ospina. But not for the reason, as you mentioned, Tez, which was quality. I think it's more to do with loyalty than anything.
Okay, well, I got you there, mate. Cullum McKay asks, do you think Iwobi's future could be centrally? I think yesterday he played a lot better than he does when he's out wide. Hey, good point. And also, do you think his future is at Arsenal?
His future is at Arsenal, in my opinion. He might be loaned out, you know, depending on who we bring in for the next season. But his future is definitely at Arsenal, in my opinion. As for his positional sense, I think Callum says the word future. I think even his present is at, you know, is centrally. I mean, if you look at where he plays for Nigeria, it's as a supporting striker. The only reason we've shunned him out to either of the wings is because we don't have wingers and we have too many central players. So it's square pegs, round holes. But hopefully with the desired reinforcements, he can take up a position centrally and help with some rotation with, you know, Mesut Ozil or whoever's playing number 10.
Tony, you want to crack at that?
Even though he had a brilliant game yesterday, I still don't think he is good enough to be starting for Arsenal. So which leads me to say, I don't know if he'll be there next year. Maybe alone, he may be sold, he may still be there, but I personally don't think he should be. It's interesting that we're getting these questions because a lot of people 2 weeks ago, or even on Saturday, the day before the game, were saying Iwobi should never be at Arsenal. It wasn't only us that said he wasn't performing well enough. It was pretty universal. I don't think anyone was saying, oh, Iwobi's playing brilliant and we want him at the club. But I think pretty much everyone was like, oh, he doesn't deserve to be there. So for me, one game doesn't change that. Look, I don't think he's good enough full stop, and I don't think he ever will be. So in that sense, I think he should be sold. Whether someone comes in or whether it's Wenger and they still think there is potential there and he goes out on loan or they keep him, I don't know. I think with Arsenal it is easier to play centrally because it is a free role. It's not that central role, that 10 role at Arsenal is a license to pretty much do whatever you want, within reason, obviously. And he did perform better there, but you can remember times when he popped up on the right, when he popped up on the left, which is the nature of the role. And I think he's one of them players where he's probably better if you say, just go and play, rather than give him too much to think about. Because you can see when he's not sure of his position, as in he's not used to playing there, he struggles, he doesn't know who he's meant to be marking, he doesn't know what areas on the pitch to take up. And I think when you give him nothing to think about, he's probably better because he can just go and play. The problem is the game is so tactical at this level, at the Premier League level, that you have to be able to think and think on your feet and know when what things to be doing at the right time. So it's difficult because I don't think he's ever going to be good enough to be a 10. I agree he's not as good when he's out wide, but that's because he has responsibility on him. But you can't play him wide without that responsibility, because otherwise you'd have fullbacks over like an R fullback all the time, and they'd be getting in, and then people would be blaming him for not tracking his runner. It's not that he's not a winning runner and he doesn't work hard, because I think he does. I think he just doesn't. He's tactically not astute enough. And he's been at Arsenal since he was, I think, 8 years old. So if he hasn't got it now, and I know some people blame Wenger, but if he's been at the club since he's eight, he's had as well. I'd say it's probably that for some reason he's not able to, or it just doesn't sink in. And I think if he can't learn that, he doesn't have a future at Arsenal.
Well, you know, it surprises me, and I'll throw a Wobi, Nelson out of them two players. When we seen Chamberlain leave and we seen Walcott leave, there was a position there for somebody to go and grab. I don't know why, and maybe they did, I don't know. I'm surprised that Wobi didn't put his hand up and say, "Boss, that's my position. I want to take that position." Because what Chamberlain could have stayed there and played that position. He got offered that and was going to play first team, but he wanted to play in the central midfield role. So I'm really surprised that either a Wobi or Nelson didn't put their hand up and say, "Look, that's my position." And who did we have on the podcast that guest? And I can't think of the name now. Was saying that, you know, somebody should have probably changed their style of play to fill that position.
Well, I mean, the thing is, just to cut in, is that that is Nelson's position. He just wasn't deemed as either good enough or not ready, whatever way it was. So I don't think it's a case of Nelson putting his hand up and saying, "I'll play there." I think he did. I mean, they know it's his position. He doesn't need to. There was no adapting that needed doing. It just, he was seen as not good enough. He played there in all the cup competitions, and let's be honest, he didn't set the world alight. So he's either seen as not good enough yet or not good enough at all. Either way, he wasn't ready to play there. In terms of a Wobi, I think I don't find it so comparable to Chamberlain, because we wanted to stay at right wing back, and no one was going to dethrone Hector from right wing back once Chamberlain left. But once we went back to 4-2-3-1, I think a Wobi did play a lot of games in the three behind, and he stunk the place out, which is why he lost his place. I mean, if you think, he just off the top of my head, he started at Brighton and he was terrible, and it was universally recognised he was terrible. That's not, I don't even think that's my opinion, I think it is just the general consensus. He was bad at Brighton. At Bournemouth he got an assist, but again everyone thought he played bad. Everton, he played there and he played quite well. Everton at home. So, but I mean, they did give him a run, and it for whatever reason, whether you blame him, whether you blame the system, they did give Wobi a chance in that position, and it didn't work. He was playing on the right, and for me, he's better on the left than he is on the right. And he was playing on the right and didn't do very well at all. He'd done quite badly. And then they moved him to the left, so they still accommodated him. They just moved, they switched sides for Mkhitaryan, and still he didn't do well enough. And that was when he lost his place.
Do you reckon he can improve? A Wobi?
I don't know. I don't know if he has a mental capacity, as I was saying earlier. That's my issue with him. I think tactically he's very poor. In terms of ability, actual footballing ability, he could improve his finishing, but apart from that, he actually doesn't do too much wrong with the ball at his feet. You wouldn't say he's a sloppy passer. His dribbling's okay. He doesn't really take people on enough. But he's quick enough, he's strong enough, he holds the ball very well. If I had to give him one compliment, it'd be how well he holds the ball. But as I said, I think the main issue is him is tactically, and I think if you haven't learnt that by this time, he's probably not going to. And then, there's a few little things, his composure, his finishing that you could improve, but I don't think they would make a great deal of difference if he doesn't sort out mentally, his game mentally.
Okay. Schwinn, we're going to continue this theme with the Wobi, because the Texas Gooner, and I hear there's a new edition, and I only heard it through you boys, so congratulations, Texas Gooner. After Wobi and Welbeck's performance against Southampton, who would you choose between the two to start the Europa League leg against CSKA in place of Mkhitaryan?
I think it has to be Welbeck for me. I mean, he provides a more of a threat on the wing, as we've spoken about at length today. Iwobi doesn't necessarily excel on the wing. He's more of a free roam player who likes their creative freedom, and defensively he's not as strong as Welbeck either. So I like having Welbeck out on the wing. He provides a threat, of course, as we saw on Sunday, in the box as well. And to our all of our points, as we spoke, we think, you know, at this podcast, that we're going to stick with Jack Wilshere in midfield, despite some of his form in the last couple of weeks. So for me, it has to be Welbeck. It will be probably will come off the bench, and of course, it's almost the tie is almost done and dusted at this point. So he might feature at some point, but I think it would be very, very dangerous to just give him the go and take this game for granted.
Okay, Tony, we're going to push through these questions, mate. Vish, what is going on with Jack Wilshere? His performances have dipped in recent games. Is he trying too hard, or is it mentally affected by contract negotiations?
I said last week he looks like he's playing with something else on his mind, whether that be the contract or not. I wouldn't say trying too hard, because I think he always, I mean, all footballers should, but he always appears to be trying and giving his all. So I don't think you can do more than that. I don't think it's possible for Jack to try any harder. I wouldn't say trying too hard, but he does look like he has something else on his mind. But as I said, his knee was heavily, heavily strapped before the game. So whether he's carrying a very slight injury, and again, he doesn't want to say he's injured because it looks, again, it goes down that whole injury-prone route that or theory that everyone still believes about him. I don't know if that's playing a factor, but there is definitely, there's something wrong. And I don't know what it is. As I said, whether his mind's elsewhere, whether his body's not the way, not 100%, I don't know, but there's something else affecting him.
Okay, and you're in a position to answer this one again from Vish. Do we stand a chance of getting Allegri as their next manager, or Chelsea reported interest in him taking over from Conte?
There was huge rumours before we started recording that Conte had been sacked, so I don't think he has, but just in case he has, you heard it here. But I don't know. I think Luis Enrique is a very strong favourite for the Chelsea job. With Allegri, it's almost like a point in Conte Mark II, in a sense, that they've had they're coming off the back of the Juventus job. I know Conte had a stretch with the national team, but I don't know if they'll completely want to change moulds. But I know Luis Enrique is a very strong favourite for the Chelsea job, and I know Arsenal have spoke to Allegri. Whether Chelsea have as well, I don't know. We do stand a chance because we've been speaking to him for a long time, and last summer he would have took it had Wenger left. So we do stand a chance, and especially if he's not Chelsea's first choice. But again, it all depends what happens with Wenger.
Okay. Well, I have one more here from Vish, so I'll just go through it again. Tonight was a perfect example of why we are in sixth position. Our defence is brittle and erratic. Should we stick with Mustafi, or do we need to bring two times first choice centre-backs in the summer? Koscielny, Mustafi have hit and miss game.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go for this one real quick. I think I've said this a couple of times that I would, go for two center backs and a winger as my priority before I even look at a goalkeeper for next season. So that's keeping this fact in mind that we are brittle back in defense, and Koscielny's age is doing him no favors, nor is his Achilles, and Mustafi is very, very suspect. Plus, he was almost out of the door this past summer, so we don't know what's going to happen with him. I mean, Tez, you asked earlier today whether we take $20 million from a Serie A team for him, but I think the question is also whether he wants to continue sticking around because of his family issues, and his family I think lives in Milan. So despite him going or not, I would go for two center backs, one proven, one with young potential, who is happy to be a squad player. And can deputize for Koscielny sometimes, but yeah, I think two center backs is almost on the top of my wish list come this summer.
Okay, MAA Gunner, I'll stick with you for a minute. Schwinn, do we keep hold of Welbeck for next season?
I think Welbeck is one of those players who continue to divide opinion. Over the last couple of months, arguably he's stepped up, and he seems to have, he seems to be finding that form that he had at the beginning of the season. Still, I think since he has one more year on his contract, I would be happy to enter next season without having him signed on and see how things go. I'm not sure if he's going to go to the World Cup. I would think he would, considering the way the season is ending at this point. And, you know, I'm not sure whether he's going to start, but I think he will feature at the World Cup. So that's going to be another place where we can assess him. Hopefully he'll pick up some confidence there. Playing time will obviously help with that. But I don't think we'll give him an extension until the time next season starts, actually.
When you're in the shit, send in Welbeck. okay, Tony, I had one here for you because I thought this, yeah, MAA Gunner for Tony. Do you think the attendance will stay the same next season, and when do you think we'll see a full crowd at a league game?
I think the first game of next season will probably be sold out regardless of who the manager is. A lot of people, especially if you're reading online, you'll think, it's because Wenger's there that the people aren't, fans aren't going and whatnot. But the truth is, it's because we're not competitive. When the season starts, you're still in with a shout. I mean, we know we're not going to win the league, but you're still in with a shout. So there's some optimism. At the moment, there's none. Like, we play a league game and it's sort of like, what's the point? Like, we don't care between fifth and seventh. No one's going to get more excited if we finish fifth, or no one's going to be too distraught if we finish sixth. I mean, as in the difference between fifth and sixth. Mm. But with new season comes new optimism, new hope. So I think there'd be people there regardless. And I think you can kind of say the same in Europa League. Yeah, we've potentially got a chance of winning it, but it's still a second-string competition. So, again, if we get through to the semis, it'll be sold out. And I know the question was specifically about league games, but I know I didn't want people to say, but the Europa League games are still not 100% sold out. But again, it's down to expectation and optimism. The semis would be sold out. And yeah, as I said, I think next season we'll start again. Even if Wenger's there, there'd still be a lot of pissed off people. But there would also, I would be amazed if it wasn't sold out or very close to full.
Okay, Glenn Baxter asks, and I'll stick with you, Tony. Do you think we should prioritise Europa League over the league, or do we try and balance both?
I think both of them things are right. I think we prioritise, but with a balance. I don't think you go 100%, 0%. I think 60-40, 70-30. Just because, as I said before, the players need to keep their eye in, so... Yeah, you get a lot from they'll earn a lot in terms of freshness by not playing every week, but then they'll lose a lot of sharpness, and sharpness is arguably more important than fitness. So, for me, you prioritise, but you balance, and bear in mind as well, after Thursday, if we get through, we've got two league games. We've got it's 2 weeks until the next Europa League game. So, if we go 100% Europa League, that means giving all of our best players sort of 2.5 weeks off, and that isn't good for anyone.
Mm-hmm. Schwinn?
Spot on. Not much I can add on that.
Okay. Savvy asks, thoughts on Nelson's full debut. Schwinn, who do you guys prefer, Chambers or Holding?
Well, what was the first part of that question?
Thoughts on Nelson's full debut.
Thoughts on Nelson's what?
Debut. Tez can't speak English. It's Australian. It's all you know.
Oh, debut. I thought he was... Sorry. I thought he was decent. I mean, for someone who is, of course, young, he does carry bags of confidence. I think there was a couple of moments that he seemed to show that confidence. He was very happy to take on players. It will be sad to see him go because he's one of the brighter sparks that we've seen come out of the academy. But I mean, there's not much I expect from him at this point, since I've almost reserved myself to seeing him leave. As for Chambers and Holding, I think Chambers is a little more versatile. I think he can play out as a fullback as well, especially on the right. I do like Rob Holding more as centrally, though. I think he's very vocal for me. I think alone would do him really good in the next season. But long term, I could see Rob Holding getting more appearances for the Arsenal than Callum Chambers.
Yeah, right. Tony, I think this must be a new listener. I haven't seen this one. Z Thorpe AFC, has Welbeck done enough to earn a start on Thursday?
Yeah, for me. And also, not just based on what he done yesterday, but based on the age of their centre-back or their defence as a whole. For me, yeah. As Schwinn answered the question from someone else earlier, it looks like it's going to be between him and Iwobi, unless Jack drops out and they both play. If it is between him and Iwobi, just his skill set is more of a threat to what we know Moscow are going to do. So, yeah, for me, Welbeck deserves a start on Thursday.
Well, since that question popped up, give us your starting lineup, Tony.
So, Cech, Bellerin, Mustafi, Koscielny, Nacho, Xhaka, Ramsey, Ozil, Jack, Welbs, Lacazette.
Schwinn?
Ditto.
Okay. I'd be amazed if that isn't the lineup, with the only potential change being Jack for Elneny or Iwobi, if Jack's, depending on Jack's fitness. But I think 10 of them are guaranteed, to be honest. But last week I was woefully wrong, so who knows?
Okay. Did you say Welbeck over Lacazette there?
No, I said Welbeck and Lacazette.
Welbeck and Lacazette, okay, sorry. Okay, what do you guys think about Aubameyang on the wing? Oh, this is what I was talking about earlier. Tony, so yeah, what do you think about Aubameyang on the wing? Personally, if we want to get Lacazette in the 11, we need to play two up top. Aubameyang doesn't have the ball-carrying style that Mkhitaryan and Welbeck. If we were to play a left wing, it would be purely a finisher. That was from at... Fuck me, Dad. Yeah, just his name's a Wobie.
I think we've touched on this many times before. I don't want to see Aubameyang playing out on the left. Sorry, I didn't say this, because obviously, like, I've been a big Lacazette critic. I thought he was very good for the 20 he came on yesterday in terms of the positions he was taking up and the runs he was making. So again, hopefully he learned something while he was out injured, whether he watched footage or whatnot. Because I know people blamed his knee injury, but it wasn't a physical thing that was stopping him before. It was decisions, so hopefully they've worked on them. But... yeah, I wouldn't like to see Aubameyang played out left. I've said that before we signed him, and I've not seen anything that's changed my mind. How best to accommodate them both in the team? If Lacazette keeps up this current level, they will both deserve to be in the team. But it will provide a headache whether you lose a midfielder and you go with Lacazette as a, in the sort of 10 position that Jack's playing at the moment. Obviously, you lose a bit of defensive stability, but you gain goals. I think that's the only logical way I could see it. And I'm not saying like for like in terms of Lacazette plays how Jack's playing, but it's sort of that just off the striker role, but where Jack's more inclined to joining in behind him with Xhaka and Ramsey, obviously Lacazette will be more inclined to join in front of him with Aubameyang.
Schwinn, do you get the impression, like, I've got a picture on my wall of Xhaka.
Of course you do.
Do you get the impression Tony's got Jack on his wall?
Well, I think you've got one on your ceiling, don't you?
Yeah, Jack is on my ceiling. I look up at him every night.
I literally just said drop him. And where did you get that from?
I was actually a bit shocked that you said that. Yeah, no, you always seem to mention Jack. I just hear Jack now. Whenever you're talking, I just hear Jack.
I don't know. He's playing in the 10. That's his position. I can tell him to take Ozil's position if you want.
No. No, I think you're right. I think you've hit the nail on the head. The only way around it is Jack gets dropped. If you're going to fit Aubameyang and Lacazette in the same team.
I have something to add there. I think too often than not, we get lost in finding our strongest 11. And what we forget to think about is the opposition. Now, Arsene is not one of those managers who tailors his tactics based on the opposition. So maybe this won't happen under him. But under a different manager, I could see us deploying Aubameyang on the wing and continuing with Lacazette up top, just because... As it will be mentioned, that he may not have the ball carrying style, but he provides a threat behind the line of defense. Now, when you don't need Aubameyang to drop deep and do some defensive work, I think there is something there, and we saw, you know, shades of that against Stoke. I think it was at home last weekend. So, in a more regular sense, yes, it's going to provide a headache, and it's going to be a good one, as Tony said. But I think there is space for him to play on the left. On the left wing, depending on the opposition, and provide another threat from there.
I don't think it really depends on the opposition. I think he went there for the last 15, 20 minutes against a Stoke defence when they're tiring and there's more space to work in. I think in a packed defence, on the left, I don't think he would offer pretty much anything. You said you watched Match of the Day 2 last night, so hopefully it's the same as mine. And they pinpointed how he really struggled early on with there being a lack of space, and that was in his preferred central position. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't. I missed that bit.
They done a 2-minute package on him really struggling when there was no space, and how he had to change it and slightly adapt to it. But that was essentially when he's wide and there's no space. I just don't think it will suit him at all. It takes away everything he's good at. He's a natural poacher. He naturally runs into space, but when you're playing wide, you're not going to be on the shoulder of the last man at all times, and obviously you lose a lot of the poaching skills. You're also only really able to build up along one side, because even if he goes past his defender on the left, because I'm assuming we're talking about playing him on the left wing, he'd have to cut back anyway unless he gains 5 yards on him, because his left foot is for standing on.
So, I mean, it's one of those things, and as Tony said earlier, that, you know, Boldy came out last week and said that Lacazette is capable of dropping into that hole and playing there. So maybe the groundwork is being done already to, you know, to adapt Lacazette to that position so that Aubameyang can continue retaining his position up top. And maybe that means that Jack may not be around at the end of the season. So who knows?
Yeah, it's interesting. Could you run like a... how Barcelona run that formation when they a similar formation like them, but we're missing that right wing still, aren't we?
Yeah, and what do you do with Mesut Ozil then? I mean, both Mkhitaryan, less so Mkhitaryan, but more, both Mkhitaryan and Mesut Ozil.
Well, I'd have to put Ozil. He'd have to go in your central. It wouldn't work.
Yeah, I mean, a midfield of Ozil and Xhaka is nowhere strong enough. That's what, you know, we're thinking of playing them in the middle.
I was thinking Xhaka on the left, in the mids, Ozil centre, and then Ramsey on the right, Lacazette, Aubameyang central left, and then obviously Mkhitaryan on the right. But I don't think it'll work.
The thing is, you're going to have to drop at least, because they've not started together, so you're going to have to drop someone from whatever you see as our current strongest 11. So first you've got to identify who you're dropping, and then you can work around the formation. So if it's who I'm not allowed to name, I'm going to call him Voldemort from now on. So if anyone's listened to us constantly, from the podcast now on, his name is going to be Voldemort. If you just joined us, or if next week's their first episode, they're going to be fucking confused. But if it's Voldemort that gets dropped, then you can play Lacazette in 10, or the 10-ish. But that's what I mean. So you've got to identify who it is that you drop. If it's Mkhitaryan, then obviously someone's got to go further wide or whoever it is.
No one's going to drop Mkhitaryan. He's the pretty boy at the moment. Mkhitaryan, Lacazette, Aubameyang, they're the pretty boys at the moment.
Yeah. So then, as I said, you select what players you're naming, who your 11 are, and then you have to fit them into a shape that suits. And as I said, the only way I can see it fitting at the moment is with Lacazette playing. It's not a 10 in a traditional sense, but traditional senses don't exist anymore. As soon as a false 9 came about, you can kind of forget traditional positions. So I would say the only way I can see it fitting is Lacazette in a false 10, almost.
How much is Mkhitaryan? He's not a real, he's not a lot of pace on him, is he?
He isn't, and to be honest, I think pace in football is only really effective when you're running away from the ball. as in you're running away from the defender. So we'll say Vardy's quick. We'll say, obviously, Aubameyang's quick. We'll say Walcott was quick. Welbeck is quick because they run in behind. Mm. Someone like Mkhitaryan doesn't run in behind. So his pace doesn't really, even if he was, it doesn't really matter because he doesn't utilise it to hurt the opposition. He's not slow. He's not slow by a long stretch. But as I said, because he doesn't run away from the defence, the pace doesn't really mean much.
It's a good headache to have, but I'm glad it's not my headache, to be honest, boys. But I think you've got to. I agree with the question. I think somewhere along the lines you've got, and we've discussed it here before. And I'm not saying just because Lacazette's a $50 million striker and Aubameyang's whatever we paid $50 million for him. So, but it's the fact that I think Lacazette and Aubameyang really accomplish each other.
Accommodate
each other. So yeah, I just think that'll be something that we need to work on. And then you've got Ozil. Xhaka's coming along really well. So I think there's, you know, to build a team around them type of three or four players, and obviously Mkhitaryan as well. So interesting. Okay. Any girls to add on that, Schwinn? You're good?
All good.
All good, Tony?
No, I'm all good.
All good, okay. Well, we'll be back, Friday, boys?
Yes, sir.
That's right.
Okay, we got a quick prediction, Schwinn?
I'll go for a 2-0 win.
2-0 win.
To the Arsenal.
And Tony, you're going to give us that same old prediction, aren't we?
Yeah, 10-0 Voldemort to score 10. As you can tell, I'm not petty.
Nor biased.
I'm going to go 3-0 Xhaka to score a cracking goal from, let's go halfway because I reckon he's due for a big shot. he's that good, he'll probably get it in from halfway. Easy.
I may be a fence sitter on this pod, but I'm definitely not as biased as the both of you, am I?
No, that's true. Tony's not going to talk about it no more.
Who's our number 10? I forgot his name.
Okay, boys.
I've logged off already, so I'm not going to answer their question.
Okay, it's been great. Chat again Friday and up the Arsenal. Thanks, boys.
Thank you. Have a good week.